Welcome to the West Ham Way USA podcast. My name is Tony, and on this other side, we have someone different this week. We have Nick and Dan filling in for Brawley. So what's up, fellas?
What's up?
Hey, what's up, Tony?
Okay, so I think you've heard both of them. Nick, have you been on before? I know Dan has.
What?
Yeah, you've been on twice.
I've been on once. It was right after Declan scored his first goal for the club against Arsenal.
Was that when we were still American West Ham Way podcast? I mean, when we were the American. Oh my God, it's been so long. I can't even get the name right anymore.
In the before times, yeah. It's like a year and a half ago.
What were we? The American West Ham podcast. Good God. So this is episode number 19, folks. Maybe that's why I'm a little rusty. What are we drinking, fellas? This is going to be a little more casual podcast. Just casual West Ham chat with Nick and Dan from Brooklyn. Got them going on. So what is Dan drinking first? Dan, go ahead.
I'm drinking a little small glass of wine here.
I thought you was on the water.
Small glass of red. Small glass of red.
You know, okay. you gotta cut your wine with some water.
Like... Just a little, he's got ice cubes in there. Nick, what are you drinking there?
I've got some weird Polish beer I bought at the grocery store. Okosim Pivo.
Is that good?
It's very good, actually.
Okay, describe it closest to, like, so I'm in a super can mood right now as well. I've been, like, all can city. Describe it closest to American beer. Is it, like, shit beer where it's, like, just casual?
No.
Or is it, like, a little fancy, like, an IPA? What we got going on?
No. It's not an American beer, but the closest comparison is to, like, a Carlsberg, like, just sort of a pale lager.
Oh, okay.
Even though, well, I guess it doesn't say whether it's an ale or a lager, but, yeah, no, it's good. The can has some very sort of folk decoration on it and says, okay, beer, in really big text. And I thought that was really funny. And it was only $1.50 for a pint. And so
– gotta love those Brooklyn prices.
Decision made. Yeah.
I mean, that's like also low expectations for the beer. If it's like, yeah, it's okay, beer. Just don't refine.
Yeah, low risk, very high reward.
On the – Peroni tonight is what I'm going for.
Ooh, Peroni. Wow.
After Ogbonna's great game yesterday, I figured I'd go Italian beer.
Wow, we love it.
So, I guess we should start with the obvious big win yesterday.
Huge win.
We're not gonna start with the Declan Rice goal?
No. We'll get into that. We'll get into that in a second. Okay, so... Dan has been waiting for this like all afternoon. He's like, so Declan Rice's goal, right? Yeah, big win. 3-0 at half, 3-1 final. Puts us 6 points clear. I put out a tweet yesterday that you never know following West Ham. I refuse to say we're safe, even though we are. Some people thought I was serious. It was clearly a joke, but, you know, it is what it is. So what are your thoughts after two big victories, 7 goals in 2 games?
What's happening? Dan and I were sitting here watching the game, and as we normally do, now granted this is an afternoon game for us here on the East Coast, and we sit down, we got a little coffee, you know, we're gonna wait till we get further into the game to start drinking, but we're ready for the long haul, the way that West Ham puts you through it. And then in the first 3 minutes,
yep,
we scored, and then we scored again before the 10th minute. And from that point forward, I mean, I've just been living in a new universe. I think my entire life is going to be sort of split from before this game and after this game because I just see the world in a whole new light.
I mean, I'm personally putting it on me wearing the Andy Carroll kit. I've worn it the past 2 matches. Our goal differential is +6. I can't wash it. I can't take it off.
Absolutely not.
It's my new lucky kit.
No.
So I'm looking back at our results, right? Yeah. We beat Watford and we beat Norwich, right? The last time I see two greens on my screen, which stand for wins, were the games I was at in January when we beat Bournemouth 4-0 and we beat Gillingham 2-0. The last time that we won two league matches in a row was Watford in August and Norwich. In August.
It was the first time David Moyes ever won back to back league games at West Ham.
Jesus Christ. So that's one of the other things I want to talk about. Since this is the casual Let's Have a Beer podcast, we're going to skip around and whatever pops on my head I wanted to talk about. Let's also discuss this David Moyes love all over Twitter right now. Where do you guys feel on Moyes? Because X put out a podcast. I mean, a podcast. Well, he does do podcasts. He put out a poll, and the last time I looked with a couple hundred votes, it was, would you keep Moyes after the last two performances? And it was 71% yes. And all I remember all season, all since the takeover, everyone was like, well, Moyes is fucking shit. He's terrible, right? His tactics suck, all of that. And now all of a sudden, 71% of people are like, yeah, let's keep him. So what are y'all thoughts on David Moyes? Let's talk about that.
So
we'll bounce around.
I was one of the 71% that voted yes.
Wild.
Damn.
Wild to me.
And damn, it's really for one reason and one reason only. It's that yesterday during the match, X put out a tweet that said, Declan Rice gets on really well with David Moyes. And if keeping David Moyes means we can keep Declan Rice, I am all for keeping David Moyes for one more year.
I saw the tweet from normal co-host Brawley Darbin he said that the poll was a great example of how fickle fans are. Yep. And I couldn't agree more, because we know Moyes is trash. He's absolute clown college. There's no reason that he should be hanging around anymore. It was an embarrassment for him to come back to the club in the first place.
We are run like a circus.
That's fair. He hasn't done anything genuinely worth celebrating. Dave said in their last podcast that if we stay up, it's not something to celebrate as bare minimum that we
it's
should
embarrassing.
Be. Yeah, that we should be in the Premier League next year. So the idea that David Moyes has helped keep us up twice, granted, the first time he came in like October or November, so that wasn't exactly like he was, you know, short on time. And he kept us up this time coming in January. I'm not impressed. That's not like, oh man, this is clearly a manager to go forward, because he managed to scrape enough points together once our starting goalkeeper came back to keep us in the league. If that's your criteria for who needs to be managing us, then I mean, that's the opposite of ambitious. If we're meant to be, you know, a club pushing forward, then David Moyes is absolutely not that.
Well, then on top of that, all we did was beat two relegation sides in a row. So I saw the fantastic tweet someone put out, you know, he's done the job twice now that he was brought in to do, which is great. You know, I appreciate you, David Moyes. I really do. You know, seemed like a cool guy, all that. But I don't think he's the guy to take us forward. We thought that was Pellegrini, and he wasn't either. So I don't know if I trust the board to do the proper recruitment of a manager and players, but I still don't believe David Moyes is that guy from performances I've seen all season. It was just nice that we finally hit a nice stretch of two terrible teams.
But to play devil's advocate here for just a second, because while I agree with both of you, I do not think he is the manager to take us forward. Is there a manager that's going to take us forward that's willing to come and work with our board right now?
Oof. Fair. I don't think so.
Like, could we not use a year of stability?
We definitely could. It's just wild to me that our management situation is effectively like a hostage situation with David Moyes. We like found one guy who's got like leftover Stockholm syndrome from his first run at the club, and managed to extort our owners into a longer term contract this time around. And that's the best we can do. Is pretty rank.
I mean, it's smart on David Moyes in his position, I should say. You know, he's done the job, and he seems to get the most out of quote unquote his guys. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, we should be getting a manager who should be able to get the team going with all the guys, and we should be having a board who, I don't even think they should be doing the recruitment. I think they should be doing the buy-in, the financial side. But we had a director of football that was a disgrace. We had a manager who seemed just, I don't know what Pellegrini's problem was. We had a board that was out of touch. I mean, it was just a comedy of errors. So David Moyes did a good job getting us there. But, I mean, I'm probably sound like a dickhead, but I feel like any of us three in this podcast could have beaten Arch and Watford.
The only thing I will say to David Moyes' credit at his current stint with the club is that this time around he came in with a very clear, at least the first one of his first talking points was about having a long-term plan for the club. and with his whole like RB Leipzig Salzburg model situation. Now, how realistic you think that is a totally different discussion. I know there was some conversation on the Guardian Football Weekly podcast. They were talking about how it's a good plan, but like, do West Ham do good plans?
No,
we barely do plans. So if that's the idea, if we actually do invest in a long-term plan, whether it's a Red Bull model or somebody else, I think that's a movement in the right direction to invest in a long-term plan. What will we actually do that? Man, highly unlikely. But the idea that his tack this time at least was to talk about establishing a long-term plan is notable.
And Tony, you and I had this conversation in September when you were up for the Man U match,
yeah,
talking about how we would both love to see West Ham dedicate £50 million to completely revamping their facilities,
yep,
and invest,
absolutely,
in the youth academy.
Yeah.
But is that something West Ham's willing to do?
Well, clearly not. And especially to confirm that, we've been given the perfect example. Letting a bright star in Ngakia just walk away. Now, we don't know the behind the scenes. I'm not there.
Oh, I'll have some more on that later, Tony.
Well, my point was, though, you know, if you're going to go the academy route, then you need to put up and shut up and pay someone who you think is worth the money. Sometimes you're going to get burned like a Reese Oxford, or sometimes you're going to get a Declan Rice. And didn't we go through this with Rice about wanting a new contract, and they finally got it across the line a few months ago or a year ago?
So, yeah, we did.
So if you want to invest $50 million or put all that money in a new training/academy, which I am all for. I mean, have you seen the state of our facilities? It's a trailer park.
Yeah, not great. And not to mention all that info we got sort of from January till now about the non-existent scouting framework that we have. The idea that we, I mean, it's clear to us as fans who, you know, keep up with everything going on with the club that it's not run like a professional. Yeah, it's not run well. It's not run like a professional club, but it's not just like, oh, they, you know, they're doing things poorly. It's there are entire mechanisms.
They're just not doing things.
Yeah, they're just not doing things at all. There are entire mechanisms that make European clubs tick, and West Ham cannot even check the boxes for those mechanisms existing in the first place. So that's, I mean, I wouldn't call that a defense of David Moyes to say that it's not his fault that the club is sort of administratively impotent, but rough.
How we even survive is just astonishing to me. For how much wage that we waste, Brawley and I spoke about it on last week's podcast. We waste so much in wages and money on players that don't turn out when there's no system. Like, okay, both y'all taking a drink of water, so I'm gonna keep on talking for 30 seconds here.
Let it rip.
But my question is, can either of you name one style of play other than losing that describes West Ham? Like, name me one thing that we do well that you're like, hey, I know what the fuck we're gonna do today.
I have mine's a bit of a runaround. So do you know, occasionally in like a movie or a TV show, there'll be some stunt situation where they put a brick on the gas pedal of a car, and then they get out of the car and they let the car run empty into something, and then it blows up or whatever. Mikhail Antonio.
That is us.
That is, I believe our, I will. Okay. That, I mean, as much as I don't necessarily, I disagree with what I just said, I will say I've noticed in the last few games, I've tweeted about it a couple times, that whenever our midfield is Rice, Suchek, and Mark Noble, we've been playing Mark Noble in sort of an uncharacteristically forward set position, mm-hmm, which looks hysterical to many people to see him running around up top and, you know, in between their center backs defending and stuff. But all things considered, knowing that Mark Noble is the age that he is and has the sort of level of consistency that he does, to put him up top when you know he is a big fan of running around in circles and running people down and doing all this, you know, bulldog sort of hunting up the pitch style of play. And you've got Rice and Suchek behind him as a safety net. It's the most useful place to put him, honestly.
I think the craziest thing about Noble, and I said this to – see, the problem with me doing podcasting is I forget what conversations I have. But Noble said in the interview last year or earlier in the year that we shouldn't even be relying on him at this age, that he shouldn't be the game changer. And if he's the game changer, then we have bigger problems as a club. Daniel, you want to say something before I jumped in?
Yeah, I was just going to like build on to what Nick was saying about Antonio being like our catalyst at this point. But Jared Bowen's also becoming that guy. Yeah. It seems like a lot of our strategy right now is just punt the ball upfield and hope Antonio or Bowen get on it and then wait for the rest of the team to catch up. And that's our strategy right now.
And that goes back to my original point of there is no strategy. The strategy is hoof it to Antonio and hopefully beast mode takes over. Because other than that, it's not played defensively well. It's not like if we were winning games 1-0, 2-0, drawing 0-0, maybe losing 1-0, that's one thing. But we're not defending well. Then we'll go on runs where we can't score. It's not a possession team. We're constantly not in possession. We're not a counter team. We're only a counter team because we suck sometimes. So, there's literally no identity whatsoever for this team. And that's what I have the most concerning factor. And I'm not sure David Moyes has a strategy for the tactic side. I do agree with his Red Bull Leipzig idea and maybe recruitment. But I don't think he has a strategic style of play that will move us forward.
Well, I mean, in the past two matches, he has told the defense that conceding goals is bad, and we've only conceded one goal. So
yeah, we got that going for us, which is nice. I do think our center backs have been playing, especially Ogbonna's been huge. Our center backs have been playing a lot better. Problem is that our fullbacks, as everyone's pointed out, are straight trash garbage and leave the center backs with twice the work to do because there's so little going on with our fullback situation. But I see hints of things here and there that sort of develop spontaneously, like Suchek's rise to prominence in recent games. Dan's got more he'll tell about Suchek whenever we get into maybe dissecting the Watford match. But
you mean 17 minutes in where we were 2 seconds into the match, and then I'm like, yeah, so the board and David Moyes, what y'all think?
Suchek has been doing some really interesting stuff in the midfield as far as sort of taking command of knowing when he can go push forward. And he was, in and around attacking situations a lot for the role that we, sort of signed him up to play. So I guess that's less of a tactical thing and more of a, giving freedom to him to do that. But I agree with you. We don't have – you couldn't say – like you look at Liverpool and you know that they play like a 4-3-3 and you know exactly how each of their players operates and the way that Firmino drops deep and works Salah and Mane into the play. You can you can see all of that clear as day. And obviously that's not the only reason that they, did so well this year. They're incredibly well managed and have an incredibly high quality team, but it's a club where there's no question mark over how they play. I made a joke to Dan earlier that maybe West Ham should just double, triple down on being a 4-4-2, just a straight, hard-nosed 4-4-2. I don't know if I actually like that idea. I was mostly joking when I said it, but I'm open to anything. The idea that somebody can look at West Ham and go, they play like this, is really, that's what I want at this point. It's just some sort of something.
Well, when we were watching the City-Bournemouth match, was it City-Bournemouth that played this week? I think right? One of the commentators said, it doesn't matter who is rotating in at City. They're going to play the same system every single week. And they just can sub anyone in, and the tactics don't change.
Yeah, now they do have a much deeper side. Same concept of they don't really even tailor their team or to the players, but they tailor the players to the play style. As in, they know how they're going to play. They bring in players how they want to play, and it works. They obviously have more funds and resources, but in theory, that's how you should operate. Let's do a quick segue into, because we definitely did not talk about the match at all, because I went well off topic. let's hear some Danalytics, because we're going to bring Dan's that back. Danalytics was when the American West Ham podcast was like, hey, let's try journalism. And I was trying to write some articles. Mine were kind of trash, but then Dan gave us some like awesome like analytic writing, and I was like, what the hell? He's onto something here. And then all of a sudden we switched platforms, which has been great for the podcast, but it was bad for our journalism team of Dan. So so Dan, can you take it away with some like fun facts for us to talk about, let you lead the discussion here?
Yeah. So what I think was most interesting about the match yesterday is I sent a tweet out earlier with the heat maps of, I believe it was Antonio, Creswell, Souček, and Fornals. We are exclusively attack down the left. Almost every single player, their heat map is on the left side of the pitch. And Nick and I were hypothesizing maybe that's because they wanted to protect Ben Johnson. Yeah. And if that's the case, that's great. But it's really, really interesting to me because I also pulled it up over previous matches as well. And that seems to be our tactic right now, is get it down the left side and just hope something happens.
I want to interject real quick that I do think there's a pattern to most teams preferring the left side anyway, because most players are right-footed.
And you can cut back in.
Yeah. But definitely sense. It is a, especially looking at Antonio's heat map as a player that's supposed to be playing centrally, and you know, who knows if he has a foot preference at this point. he is really heavy on the left side of the pitch. Anyway.
Listen, that man scored 4 goals, okay, against, even though it was Norwich, he scored 4 goals. So I think he would prefer to tell you to suck his ass when it comes to talking about foot preference, because he scored, like, in, I think, all different ways, like with his head, with his feet. So give him some cushion there.
A couple other things that I found really interesting. So, Pablo. Let's talk about Pablo, because Pablo didn't seem to do much yesterday. Like, his stat sheet isn't full. But I went back and rewatched the match, and on every goal, he was instrumental in the buildup. On the Antonio goal, it took a deflection off a defender. Nick and I were discussing whether Antonio would have scored had it taken the deflection. Unsure. On the Souček goal, he played the ball from the middle back across the field to Ben Johnson on the right side, who hit it to Bowen. And then on the Declan goal with Noble's assist, I mean, that shouldn't really count. But like, he had 3 really key passes, especially with the Antonio and Souček goal, that probably would have, that go unnoticed on the stat sheet.
Do you think a factor there that we're missing from Lanzini's play, that little extra crispness that you get from Fornals?
I think Fornals has been, at least recently, and he definitely, when he started getting started more in the second half of the season, you saw his uptick in performance. I think he's understanding his chemistry with the rest of the midfield is better than Lanzini's right now. And his confidence is certainly higher. The games that we've seen Lanzini playing in, he'll hold onto the ball for a long time. The guy weighs 20 pounds and he'll get mugged off about every time he dribbles through the midfield. Whereas Fornals is making quick passes. He's not holding onto the ball for a long time.
Not to mention, he's all over the place. Like, not the fastest person at all.
Position.
But gosh, he hustles. Yeah, and like, I know that's not like, he's not a stat. But
it's fundamentals, Dan.
You can tell that he runs his socks off to get back and play defense. Sometimes, much to the West Ham fan's chagrin, because he just hangs out on the back line and plays somebody onside.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I was going to say, you know, I think a lot of people gave him some shtick for not getting back onside, which kept the, I mean, or leaving everybody onside, I should say, for that goal last week. But I will say it was refreshing that he tracked back. So I will say it was criminal that he didn't follow through with his great intuition to get back, but it is refreshing that he did track back, which I think has been a little bit of a difference. When you look at why Creswell and Masuaku struggled this year, I think a lot of it is because Anderson left them out to dry so many times this year. I mean, just having two-on-one, getting just absolutely toasted with no cover. When he did play, obviously.
Yeah, and that's one thing about Creswell's game, and also Masuaku and Ryan Fredericks, that I think all three of them play a more attacking role. And some I took a look at Ben Johnson's stats yesterday. So I know we love Ngakia. I want Ngakia to succeed. He's a tribute to the West Ham Academy. Ngakia is short, right? Ben Johnson's 6 feet tall, which, I mean, I know height shouldn't matter, but in yesterday's match, he won more headers than Ngakia won in every match that he played.
Didn't he? Wasn't Ben Johnson 5 for 6 at aerial duels or something like that? I thought I saw
4 for 6. Yeah, 4 for 6.
4 for 6. Okay, yeah, but still, that's crazy.
I feel like positionally, he was exactly where he needed to be. There were a couple balls that were put into the box late by Watford, where he read what was happening and cleaned it up. And does he have the potential of Ngakia? I'm unsure. But I think defensively he's better than Ngakia is at this point in his career.
So I want to transition into the offensive side of Saturday's game, Friday's game, I should say. It's Saturday night. Let's just skip to the beautiful goal from Declan Rice. Who had Declan Rice 3-0 up in the first half on their bingo card?
The closest I got was saying at an earlier corner, let's get Declan a goal. He hasn't scored yet this year. Which is
put that big meaty British forehead on it.
That big meaty formerly Irish forehead. I
you
say that
20
every game.
Million pounds more because he switched nationality forehead.
Yeah, but I also say let's get Declan a goal every game at our first or second corner, so that's not exactly special. But what a fucking hit!
Right,
what a hit! That, oh my god, for a defensive midfielder to take a pass from Mark Noble, simple 5-yard pass. You can tell, I've watched it a million times now. Takes the ball at his feet, looks up, sees Ben Foster, who's not even off his line. My best guess, which we were rewatching it over and over again earlier, is that all of the players that were in the box, and we actually had players in the box, which is
shocking.
Amazing. Yeah. All the players in the box, when Mark passed the ball back to Declan, they all kind of backed up to prep again to like run at goal if a ball came in. And so when they all backed towards the edge of the area or, you know, in that direction, Ben Foster took like 2 steps towards the edge of the 6-yard box, still in the 6-yard box. He's not like off his line. He's not like, you know, out in no man's land. And Declan looks up, sees that, and from some wild angle, 33 yards out, decides he's just going to put it in the corner netting.
I was definitely expecting cross there. I thought I was like, oh yeah, sure. Declan put up a nice cross. Goal! What? Yeah, definitely caught me off guard.
1000%. Unbelievable. Goal of the season for me. That's our goal of the season.
I have nothing more to add other than the fact that because that came off a corner. Bowen hit the ball in. It was cleared out. Pablo Witten got the ball down. I'm just here to pump up Pablo. That's really all.
This is the Pablo Fornals like love podcast right now. I guess the most exciting thing for me seeing him take that hit was just almost like a confidence, like, you know what, fuck it, let's just get 3 points and get out of here. One other thing I want to say about the game.
I just feel like he's been doing that a little bit more lately.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He'll take a longer shot if he feels like he has the chance. He even took one later in the match that took a deflection, but that was going to be on frame.
Yeah, and I want him to, because I think that's, in my opinion, that's one piece of his game. If he could elevate his offensive skills, I mean, he would be probably the most talented British midfielder or English midfielder that they have right now. I mean, he's so talented defensively. He's versatile when it comes to playing in the back. He's tall enough to win aerial duels. He's great with tackling, standing and sliding tackle. And his passing's solid. So really the only thing he can't do is shoot. And then next thing you know, if he learns that skill, well, I'll be damned. We're looking at a $80 to $90 to $100 million price tag.
Absolutely insane. I mean,
I made the joke that once he hit that ball, his value went up 20 million pounds.
That's a 20 million pound shot.
That's a 20 million pound goal right there. It almost felt like I joked with Brawley last week, you know, when we were talking about before the game, these last three games are just as big as the championship playoff final. These are million pound games, almost a billion pound games, because if we drop down, especially with COVID, you know, no gate receipts. Who knows what TV contracts are going to be like? All of that, you know, could be more because more people watch on TV. Maybe, I don't know. But my point was, you know, we needed to stay in the Premier League. It was essential to. I mean, I could have easily saw us doing a double down like Sunderland. So moving forward with that, you know, I was a little nervous. Were you guys nervous at all when Watford scored, or did you feel like we still had it? Like, I definitely felt back of my chest. I was like, "Oh fuck, here we go."
I felt pretty confident, which is weird because every other game where West Ham has ever been up and then conceded, that was that, and it, you know, rest of the dominoes fell. But I think just because we had played so unreasonably well in the first half, that the one goal was not great, but not the end of the world.
I wanted us to get to the drinks break up 3-1.
Yeah.
If we got to the drinks break up 3-1, I knew we were going to win. If they scored another, I don't know if we – I think we would have drawn.
My biggest scare was the fact that it was so early. Right out the doors, right out the second half, I was a bit nervous there because once one falls, maybe you accidentally concede a second one. Next thing you know, now you're nervous. It's 3-2, mm-hmm. you know. And it just snowballs from there. But they did well. Like you said, drinks break solidified the team, got 3 points. Now we're 6 points clear. We have to be almost what? Got to be at least 10 goal differential on some of these teams, especially after
– More.
More. Especially after winning 4-0.
I think Bournemouth is 12 and Villa is 15.
So do you guys feel comfortable enough to call us safe?
I mean, I did the math last night because –
Because you had nothing else to do.
Much like your tweet, Tony. I was like, okay, so if Man U beats us 6-0, what's going to
like? I will say I heard the stat that no Premier League team has ever been 6 points off the drop this late in the season and still gone down.
Fuck, that's so West Ham, though. That literally calls our name. That's really the most West Ham thing I've ever heard in my life to happen.
But I mean, United obviously playing a lot better than when we played them last, when they were in the middle of being total garbage. And Villa, I guess that could go either way. We drew with Villa, right? That was mm-hmm. a 0-0 draw when we played away at Villa. And Watford's got a terrible run in.
Yeah, they have City and Arsenal. And Arsenal's going to be playing.
And we're up
for something in that last.
We're
match.
Up to 15th. Yeah. Our goal differential is very good to us,
even over Brighton. So
it would be wild for Bright. It would be effectively Brighton, Watford, and Villa probably would have to all
win out,
and we would have to lose out
and for us lose to go down significantly.
So I
jokingly said, I really don't think that we're going to – like, I think we're fine. I'm ready to celebrate. It's just one of those things for me where I just want to celebrate when it's official. I have a tough time jinxing it.
I would love nothing more than a Bournemouth draw or loss tomorrow and a Villa draw or loss before we play United on Wednesday. That's what I would really love.
I mean, Bournemouth do have to go up against Danny Football Lings tomorrow.
You got
to
watch out for Danny Football Lings.
Danny Football, baby.
You know why? That's a great, great conversational starter here. So, long story short, ending the Watford conversation, do you have any final thoughts there before we move into Nick's famous question he texted me about earlier today?
I will final say thoughts. That I hope Watford don't go down. I would, if the current bottom three go down, that would be nice. I like Elton John too much, so I'm happy to keep Watford. Happy to keep the Hornets in. And Harry the Hornet. Is that his name right? The mascot?
Yeah, that's Harry the Hornet. No, I need Watford to go down for to answer your question later. So keep on going. Dan, any final thoughts?
Oh, wow. Okay. Wait, before we move on. Well, this might be a segue. I don't know. Yeah, I'll wait because it's about a player on Watford. So I'll
friendly banter. I'll no, I'm just kidding. Okay, yeah. Dan, any final thoughts on the game before Nick asks his question?
I think we're good to move on.
I don't know why I'm making it sound like it's like the biggest question, like he's about to pop the question or some shit. It's just like a simple, casual podcast question. So go ahead, buddy.
Biggest question I've ever asked in my life. If you and I asked a bunch of people this, I tweeted it out. I asked some friends that are supporters of, you know, top six clubs. If you could scoop up any player that's on a team currently in the bottom half of the table, what player would you scoop up? Tony, feel free to.
Okay, so I have one that I'm like 100% for, and a few that I'm like, yeah, maybe, if the price was right. So I
there
would
were
do.
Couple, there were a couple obvious answers that I heard from a lot of people.
I'm assuming it's got to be.
Hold on. This is if the price is right, or if this is if someone were gifted to us, because that changes answers.
No, I'm saying dream scenario, you get a free hit, you just get to take somebody. Expansion draft.
MLS 2027 50th team expansion draft.
It's the early 90s, and you're the Minnesota Timberwolves, and
Kevin Garnett's already off the board.
And Rick Mahorn just got waived from the Pistons, and you can take him off the Bad Boys. Who are you stealing?
Can we talk about for like 30 seconds? How the Detroit Pistons won that NBA championship with that team that was like...
Do you mean how they won back-to-back championships with one of the...
With Rip.
Or you mean 04?
And Chauncey?
You mean
was
the
that
Bad
like
Boys?
Rip Hamilton, 04. Ben...
Yeah, oh, Chauncey Billups, Big Ben, Tayshaun Prince.
Oh, my God.
What a team.
Mr. Big Shot, baby. Chauncey Billups. Ben Wallace. Sheed. Ball don't lie. Rasheed Wallace.
My
God.
Malice
every British listener just turned the podcast off.
Yeah. Well, y'all didn't even stay for the question. Okay, so if you made it through the Detroit Pistons conversation, that was 10 seconds. My number one would obviously be from Watford Decore. Big fan.
I haven't heard anyone say Decore, I don't think.
Really?
Whatever. Well, quick question re-Watford. What is Dale Lefebvre injured?
Yes. Yes, according to FotMob, the app that Brawley and I both use, he is injured. I don't know with what.
Gotcha.
I didn't bother looking. I did see that, though. Other ones, Nathan Atke from Bournemouth, as well as Ryan Fraser, big fan there. Let's see, Palace, Van Aanholt, big fan. Mm-hmm. Newcastle, Andy Carroll. Y'all might know him.
Great answer.
No, I'm just kidding. I think Lascelles, I think, is a solid player, also English. I'm not a big fan. I'm not sure if anyone said this on your list. I'm not a big fan of Jonjo Shelvey. I think he's like just bang average, overrated.
Yeah, nobody said Jonjo. I'm not a big fan of Jonjo either. And also, had someone seen my question that allowed them to pick any player from the bottom half of the table and they said Jonjo still, I'd have to physically fight them. That's nonsense.
Last funny one I have, because they're technically in the bottom half of the table, Richarlison from Everton.
Good point. Good point.
Any other?
Who would be your one, though? Let's say, I guess, from...
If I could only pick one, it would be Decore. I think he's an absolute just engine in that midfield. Absolute stud. I love the guy. I think he would fit fantastic in our midfield. But I guess all of that came before like Suchek. So I'm not sure how I feel about like a Decore, Suchek, Rice midfield. So
I mean, we still need to replace Mark.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I would love to see, like, let me try to think of, well, you have Danny Football Ings, but he's a striker. I think this team really misses, and I'm not sure where we would find that in the bottom half of the table. Maybe all on your list. I'll give y'all the next chance here. But I really think we miss somebody that has that like final attacking threat. It doesn't even have to be a goal scorer, but someone who has that vision to make that final pass. And we haven't had that since Payet. I always say that was supposed to be Lanzini when Payet left, and he did not deliver on that. I think Lanzini was extremely successful when Payet drew more markers. But I really think we missed that final person to be like, yo, I'm going to get Antonio the ball, or I'm going to deliver that perfect pass to Allaire, which is a reason I think our strikers are always lacking, and we call them tell them that they suck because they don't get proper service or passes. So,
yeah,
that was long-winded. Who do you guys have in your list?
Oh, a list. Okay.
Or name one. You don't have to have a whole-ass list.
I'll tell you. If I could take one player, it would be Danny Football Ings. Just for the simple fact of having some – calling him Danny Football.
Danny Football, baby.
I don't know if he's marketed that, but if he hasn't, he should absolutely market Danny Football.
Wait, hold on 1 second. Real quick, definitely should do like a collaboration with Johnny Football Manziel.
I mean, I think he shouldn't. Because Johnny Manziel sucks, but
Johnny Manziel, the greatest Canadian football player of all time.
No, we've been saying for a long time that if we're gonna stick with Allaire, we need to get him a strike partner.
Yep.
And I think that he and Danny Ings could play really well off of each other, especially if Danny Ings is playing the role of a second striker. I think they could play really, really well together. And Danny Ings is outperformed his XG this year. I just looked. He scored 20 goals with an XG of 14. Even if he were to revert to the mean and score 12 goals, that's still more than a single goal scorer for West Ham.
He scored 20 goals this year?
He scored 20 goals this year. Oh, yeah.
He's in the golden boot race.
Yeah.
Holy Tony. Fuck. I did not notice that at all.
Danny Football, baby.
But if I were to think realistically, I would love Luka Dunja from Everton. Mm. I think he's a solid left back. Mm. Tony, to your point, I think Jack Grealish could potentially play that role.
Ooh, I like that one as that string puller.
Attacking midfielder. And a person from Watford that I fell in love with yesterday, because let's be honest, I don't watch a lot of Watford football, but Sar ran his socks off yesterday, like Antonio-esque, and he's 22. And if we could get someone to fill that Antonio role of just, I'm going to outwork everyone for the ball, it'd be incredible.
Or just have two Antonios.
Or just have two Antonios.
Yeah, he's causing big problems for us.
Did
to
you
back
say Dominguez Kina? No, I'm just kidding.
No. I don't have a list. I could go down each.
He has like five Balkans. Wait, hold on. Can we talk about this for a second? We've been recording for 42 minutes, and Nick has not given me one Balkan reference of anything.
Well, like, it's funny you should mention that, Tony.
No, hold on. I want everyone to understand how ridiculous this is. So I love when Nick comes on the podcast, but I definitely have to prepare myself for like a 45-minute conversation of Serbian, Croatian, Montenegrin, whatever, culture, football, food. Okay, so the fact that we've made it through 43 minutes and 10 seconds has been incredible. So now to Nick's list of who we should get, Balkans.
Well, you couldn't have teed me up better, because on my own tweet and everywhere that I showed it, I didn't reply to with my own answer. I could go down team by team and pick people. I don't need that. One name on the list, Luka Milivojevic, my boy. Absolutely bring me Luka Milivojevic. Mark Noble stops playing. Oh, who's going to take penalties? Oh, just the other best penalty taker in the Premier League, Luka Milivojevic. He can take free kicks. Incredible. Big, strong, brutish Serbian man. Oh, wow. Couldn't create in a lab a better replacement in the midfield than Luka Milivojevic.
I mean, theoretically, Fulham's outside the bottom 10.
That is true. Did you say Mitrovic?
What?
Fulham's outside the top 10.
Sure, Fulham are not in the top 10. They are not in the when I said bottom half of the table, and they're nowhere in the table.
Sorry, I was just
They're like 25th in the table.
I mean, Dan, that's a great point. Would we probably stand to gain from signing the top scorer in the championship, Alexander Mitrovic, who also You know, he's like setting records, scoring for his national team, starting for his national team as a lone striker.
Still
ahead,
young.
Ahead of Luka Jovic. Still young. I think he's my age, and he's probably 25, 26. Yeah, we could absolutely stand
surely,
a game
if they don't get promoted, he's got to be off, right?
Well, it seems like he's really enjoying Fulham. I mean, Dan mentioned it earlier. Like, wouldn't you enjoy being the best player in a league? Like, that's got to be fun. He's also still the starter for his national team. He's banging in goals left, right, and center, and he's captain of the club.
Do you remember when
to all the people out there who were like, oh, Mitrovic is bad for the changing room atmosphere. Mitrovic is bad for team chemistry. He's got an attitude problem. He's literally been made captain of the Fulham side.
So do you remember when Sebastian Giovinco came
right out of my shorts?
Do you remember when he came to when Giovinco came from Juventus over to Toronto FC and just absolutely lit up the MLS? Could easily be like that, where he's like, yo, I'm scoring goals and in the form of my life, and then takes it to the national team. He might not want to come back up to the Premier League.
It doesn't necessarily. If we sign him, I think he scores, I'm going to say minimum 12 goals.
Ooh.
His first season with us.
I wonder who the last person, I know I said it on another pod, but now I forget. So trivia question, does anyone off the top of your head know the last time West Ham had a double-digit striker?
It's Arnautovic.
Yeah, Arnie.
Oh. Well, yeah. Fuck. I guess that was anticlimactic.
who, of course, also a Serb.
But I mean, technically, we bought him as a winger, Tony. So
yeah, we did buy him as a winger. Yeah, so I would take Luka Milivojevic. I think
Andy Carroll scored 10.
A phenomenal. There's a reason that Milivojevic manages to be the staple for Crystal Palace's midfield for years, and no one seems to talk about it until he's got, you know, scoring tons of penalties. I think there's something to be said about a strong midfielder that doesn't make headlines. It's sort of like how Declan Rice does a lot of things that don't make the highlight reel. Big fan of that as an option.
So I guess the last thing I want to bring up here, I want to talk about before we end the podcast, and I'm a little nervous on how to end the podcast because Brawley always does it for me because I fuck it up. So how do you guys feel about the future? So we've established that the math pretty much says that we 99.9% stay up. How do you feel that we go into next season? Are you excited? Are you ready for another break where you're like, I can't deal with the stress? Like, what do you feel about the future of West Ham? Do you think that this will be an eye awakening where we can push on and maybe finish top half next season with the proper investment? Do you think the negativity around the club stays and we go down / fight again relegation next year? Like, what are your outlook? Not what you hope, but what does your heart tell you that next season will be? Obviously, we don't know what the investment will be, but what do you in your heart tell you that we're going to be looking at next year?
So, assuming everyone stays healthy. Can we have that caveat?
Yeah.
Assuming everyone stays healthy. I did some quick math today because I really wanted to see our points total with Fabianski in goal as opposed to when Fabianski wasn't in goal. Okay? So in 21 matches with Fabianski in goal, West Ham earned 28 points. If in 15 matches without him, we had 8 points. So I did the math. Assuming Fabianski stayed healthy all year and we had a 1.3 average point total per match, that would put us right now at 50 points going into our last two matches, which theoretically meant if we won out and results went our way, we could have been pushing for Europe.
Mm.
And I think with a solid keeper and a solid back line, and Nick and I were talking about this earlier, I'm okay with moving on from Anderson and Lanzini and reinvesting that money in fullbacks and center backs and shoring up the defense, because if we keep both Rice and Suchek, that's already a solid core of Ogbonna, Suchek, Rice, and Diop with Fabianski there as well.
Mm-hmm.
We shore up our fullbacks. We could very easily push for a top 10 finish with assuming Fabianski stays healthy.
My prediction is that next season we push for Europe, and then the season after that we're in a relegation scrap again, and then lather, rinse, repeat.
I have something that kind of creeps me out. I just thought about it. While Dan was doing his response, you know, I was like half listening because I just had like chills for a second. So sorry. Nick, I cannot even believe it feels like eternity since you and I went to like our first game together. Like you were at the Man United game. Look, you forgot. He was like, "Oh yeah, that's right."
Well, no, I didn't know if you meant in person. I know our first game together was Palace at home.
You were at the United game earlier this year when we won 2-0 and was incredible.
Love it.
Our first game, like I mean, you and I have both been to games, but our first game in England together was 2-1 when we lost to Palace when we were up 1-0, and then, you know, Declan had his red card, and that was like felt like the downfall, you know, because we were, let's see, we lost to City, then we were unbeaten in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 league matches, 6 league matches.
Yep,
and we could have gone like third on the table.
Yeah,
we drew with Bournemouth. We drew with Bournemouth the week before Fabianski was injured.
I watched that,
and then
I watched that game on my phone in a restaurant in Belgrade.
Yeah, wow. So chef. It just feels like eternity since then. So that, I think that's just what I wanted to point out real quick to the listeners is we were there, and I almost forgot. That was like less than a year ago. But between like how horrible this season's been and then COVID-19, yeah, that's kind of funny that we were just in Hackney having beers together within the year.
Yeah, it's been ages. I mean, shit, fucking earlier in 2020 feels like it's been 8 years since March. Last time I was in a bar. Come on.
Yeah, that's true. Didn't I come up recently too? I think I watched a game with you guys in Smithfield recently too, before COVID too. Oh,
it Jesus. Was. It was like November, December, because we went to Kafana.
Ah, yes. Yeah. First ever Serbian experience, folks. If you ever get to New York City, go to this awesome ass place called Kafana. Did I say that right?
Yep. Yes.
Where we had Javapi.
Nope.
How do you pronounce that one?
Chivapi.
Chivapi. Okay. Fuck it. And I had some like other Serbian food that was delicious. So do that. So now the podcast is dragging out because I can't pronounce Serbian words. But I do really want to say that I really do appreciate Nick and Dan coming on here. I didn't announce it, but Brawley's on like a river float camping excursion. And that's
name
a little
something,
too,
name something more St. Louis.
Yeah, that's a little too rural America for me. Which both of you
like
guys both
bring before the baby comes.
Yeah, yeah. So Brawley's having a baby. Brawley's wife is having a baby, I should say. So he's golfing and doing like man shit. That's a lot that I wouldn't do. Like I can't do camping and stuff like that. So I'm sure both of you guys going to rural America colleges, aka UF and
rural.
Knoxville. Listen,
rural.
Florida is a hellhole, okay? It just
that doesn't
fucking
mean it's rural. It could be a hell. It could be a hellhole. It's not rural.
I drove through the middle of Florida, and it was one of the most scariest swamp land experiences of my life. So no,
hey,
Florida is rural.
Gators get out alive,
baby. And Dan went to school at Tennessee, and that in itself is just America. So no, I went to Temple in Center City, Philadelphia.
Wait, Tony,
so.
Before we go, I need your opinion on this.
Oh no, so, folks! What am I getting into? This is like the shithousery side of the podcast. What is it?
I would love the listener's opinion on this. So our new keeper kit, right? The orange one.
Yes.
It's very close to Tennessee orange.
Yes, it is.
How funny would it be if I got Manning 16 on the back of that keeper kit?
Dog, you could definitely wear that to a game in Knoxville next year, obviously considering COVID-19.
There's not going to be games,
yeah.
But
no.
Okay. Well, okay. Well, in 2022, you can wear that to, is it Lane Bryant?
Nope. Neyland Stadium.
That's fuck. Okay. You know what? Dear old Rocky Top. Okay. Anyway, that's the end of this fucking podcast.
But really though, should I get Manning 16 on the back of the keeper kit? Because that's what I'm debating.
Is that Eli or Peyton? No, I'm joking. Okay. So Nick can't even contain himself because I've insulted the entire University of Tennessee fan base that listens to this podcast.
Oh, no. I'm fine with you doing that.
Isn't Lane Bryant a women's clothing store?
Lane Bryant is a plus-size women's clothing store.
What about the football player?
You're thinking of Brian Denny.
No, the coach, Lane Kiffin, is who you're thinking.
No. Isn't there a stadium, Lane Bryant? Oh, my God. Okay, we're going to finish. If you made it through this, please rate and subscribe. With obviously past disregarding this conversation, West Ham Way USA podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at just search that shit because I don't know what it is. Brawley does that part. And then you could send us an email. You can, if you want to know our email, you can listen to the last podcast because he read it there. I am Tony at Tony Clark Dupe. That is Nick at which you can give one or both.
And Twitter's. Sampar or Nikki Sports.
Ooh, you brought them both out again. Dan, what's your Twitter there?
I am at Robert Daniel.
All right, so I want to say thank you again to all of our listeners that if you made it this far, then I don't understand.
You're a better
why,
person than I am.
and as our podcaster slash analyst slash entertainer that we all love, Katie Nolan would say, if you're listening to this on your blender, we appreciate you. So have a good night, everybody.